British fantasy author Stephen Smith tells us, there's some books that stay with you throughout your life, books you first read as a child that shape your interests, even your worldview. For me, one of those books is Watership Down by Richard Adams. My introduction to Watership Down was through Martin Rosen's 1978 film version. My dad took me to see it at the ABC Cinema in Ipswich, and although too young to fully understand the story, the visuals left an indelible mark. I didn't find the now much discussed violence of the film unsettling. I just thought it was magical and extremely exciting. When a little older, I finally read the book, and it was one of the reading experiences that one only seems to have in childhood. I soon discovered that as thrilling as the film had been, the novel contained a far deeper, darker, and even more satisfying story. Although the story takes place across just a few miles of English countryside, it is an epic adventure, and I found myself lost in the saga, fascinated by characters such as Hazel, Fiver, Bigwig, and the terrible General Woundwort. Watership Down is not a direct allegory such as Animal Farm, but through its themes, it offers strong comments on our world. For example, when I reread the book as an adult, Adams' interest in justice, specifically just leadership, became clear through his treatment of the four Warrens we visit during the story. Sandalford Warren is hierarchical, entrenched in its own rules. Its chief, although wise and experienced, has largely withdrawn from contact with the world around him, and thus ultimately fails to understand or appreciate the seriousness of the threat facing the Warren. He fails to act, condemning all, with the exception of Hazel and his friends, to extermination. As we move through the story, we come to Cowslips Warren, where the inhabitants have effectively been tamed and depend on the food supplied by the farmer, though with the knowledge that their life or relative ease means that regularly one or more of their kind will be caught within the snares. They're strictly not a community. They live almost individual lives, resigned to their fate, caring little for others. General Woundwort's Warren is one that is dreaded, and it's even worse, a tyrannical Warren where fear rules and any disobedience is punished by wounding or death. Only when the final Warren is established on Watership Down is a just leadership achieved. The community is led by one who has earned the right to lead, not through power or fear or deviousness, but by intelligence, compassion, and selfless actions. Adams clearly also had a profound understanding and knowledge of mythology and folklore. The tales of the trickster, Elahrara, have an authenticity, a heft, as though they are truly stories passed down and shaped by countless generations, as powerful guides to society, to life and death. And these stories are not just added to Watership Down to add color and texture, although entertaining tales in their own right. The adventures of Elahrara inspire and influence decisions and actions taken by characters in the book. In many ways, I believe Watership Down is a story about the power of story, the necessity of story in our lives. Elahrara gives meaning to the rabbits, an identity, connecting them to their past and encapsulating shared experiences across their species. One of the elements that separates Hazel and his companions from Cowslips Warren is the latter's rejection of those tales, a rejection of what unites their kind, a rejection of the lessons and hardships of the past, and a focus solely on the present. Richard Adams asserts that we all need stories to make sense of our existence, to understand and connect with others. The power of story gives strength, energy, and hope to Hazel and his companions, even in the darkest times. This contrasts to the stasis and imprisonment of Cowslips Warren, where they have cast aside their freedom for a life of relative ease and care little for each other. Hazel, Fiver, Bigwig, and the other rabbits Escaping from Sandalford Warren refused to accept their fate. They know their journey places them in danger, appalling danger, and that their chances of success are slim. But they have learned, partly through the tales of Ella Rara, that to have any chance of survival, they need to listen, to act, to use their wits, and work with each other as a community. Smith continues, Watership Down is a book that can help us view the world in a more balanced, compassionate way. It is a testament to the strange sheer power of story that a tale of a small group of rabbits traveling through the English countryside can teach us valuable lessons about our lives too. In Watership Down, we learn that Richard Adams frequently uses the image of the circle as a powerful symbol of unity, protection, and the natural cycle of life. Rabbits naturally huddle in a circle for warmth and safety. Adams uses this to emphasize their collective strength against the predators. The narrative structure itself is often circular. In Traveler, the story is told by Robert E. Lee's horse to a circle of friends in a stable, creating a framing device that brings the history back to a personal, intimate setting. As we know, the structure of a circle also creates a sense of equality. Every point around its edge shares the same relationship with the center. In symbolic terms, this reflects balance and unity. This is why circular arrangements appear in many communal settings, from ancient council gatherings to meditation groups. The shape naturally encourages connection and shared focus. Thoughts from the British fantasy writer Stephen Smith, speaking about the power of stories as we journey in our lives. As it happens, creative artists have been making us part of the Watership Down journey by adapting the story into a number of notable versions for the stage, from London to Chicago, helping us to sit together with others we may not know, people right there with us, living, breathing, helping us feel the danger and the need for safety as we all travel through life, and the need for empathy to bring us together, all helping us to experience firsthand the power of story that Richard Adams wants us to know firsthand. There is a project taking place along the Susquehanna River in Sunbury with aims that might be similar in a way. Susquehanna Valley Mediation will present the Really, Really Real Traveling Medicine Show, bringing local voices to the stage in a blend of theater, music, dance, visual art, and storytelling. The interactive production, written and directed by Gerard Stropnicki and Joanne Henry, premieres the weekend of March 27th, March 27th, 28th, and 29th at the Albright Center in Sunbury. The event features anonymized stories shared by community members across the Susquehanna Valley over the past 2 years. Gerard Stropnicki and Joanne Henry paid a visit to the WVIA studios to introduce us to this remarkable project and to the notion of story circles.
What we're making is a community story play that is built from our neighbors' stories, from people we know here. And I think it might be interesting, Joanne, to talk about how you brought me into your project.
Well, we both knew John O'Neill from different time periods, but we were both involved or connected with a group called Alternate Roots, Regional Organization of Theater South, and that's how I met John. And Jerry was doing a work with Bucknell during the pandemic.
It was Agnes Revisited, and then VIA, of course, working with Andrew Stuhl, created Agnes 50 years later, right? A gorgeous documentary. And so Andrew had brought me in to gather stories of folks around here.
And I saw it. I saw it online. And I was thinking, why, there's something about this that is very familiar. Who directed this? And we got a chance to ask who directed it, and Jerry came on. And somehow in that little bit of conversation, we decided that we needed to meet each other. And he came over and we sat on my front porch in the correct distance from each other and realized that we both knew John. Both have been trained by John. And that was a really big connection. Then later, when this opportunity came around, and I knew that I didn't want to do it by myself, the most logical person to connect with was Jerry.
Now, you both have mentioned John. John O'Neill is someone foundational in this way of making theater, yes?
I met John later in my search and my investigation in story. John was in the midst of the American Civil Rights Movement. He was working with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee in the organizing of people toward the Voting Rights Act. And so he was in church basements in Alabama and Mississippi and Georgia. Many of us have seen the film Selma, and we know things of those days. John was in the middle of that. And realizing that it was important for people to gain courage and sharing their stories, finding out they're not alone. And so it was part of organizing. But John was an artist and began to use the stories to create content to inspire other communities. In that group was a young actor from New York named Roscoe Orman. Do you know who Roscoe Orman? Well, he ended up on Sesame Street for a very long time as Gordon. And we were at an event to honor John when he was still alive. And I got to talk to Roscoe. He sat down by me and said, "Let's have lunch." So we did. How many people get to have lunch with Gordon from Sesame Street, right? And Gordon says, Roscoe says, I ask him, "You know, you were deeply involved in the movement. So how does it feel to be, you know, doing quality but children's television all these years?" And he said, "I never left the movement." "Explain." He says, "I knew from the time I took that on that I would be the first black man most white people in America, children, would ever meet. And I needed to be kind, honest, full of heart, full of humor, and that's Gordon." So John was that. And then he developed this story circle technique that he's been teaching folks like Joanne and I forever. And you worked with John way before I did.
Well, yeah, I guess I had imagined that was the case because I met him in the 70s, the late 70s. And I was working for Alternate Roots in St. Petersburg, Florida. They were doing their theater festival performance. And I was the office manager, and I was also scheduling or booking shows from companies that were in that group in the area. And that's how I met John. And then he ended up coming to Knoxville, and I ended up being in Knoxville, working for another theater company and for a radio station, doing what you're doing, but I'm not at the level you're doing it at, but I was doing it then. And he came to Knoxville to write a show, to write a play with another company there. And we just started hanging out. So then it was a natural thing that I would want to know what he's doing and what he's done and be trained in this modality. I come out of the church, United Methodist Church. That's how I ended up being in Nashville and ended up getting hired by Alternate Roots because I was working as a staff person for the United Methodist Council on Youth Ministries, which is a really progressive group. And because I had a background in theater and in music, it was just a natural fit for me. I've always been trying to make that connection between the arts, creativity, and social justice. So it makes sense that I'm doing this now.
So for me, then I met John. All this work is really in honor and respect for what he's taught generations. I was making community story plays working for Joe Carson in the Deep South and Appalachia and other places. And Joe became very ill, and she was at the end of her life. And I had been directing, and she had taught me to write with her on these community story plays. But I had never done the listening, the story gathering. And believe it or not, I'm kind of an introvert. And so it was not natural to me. And I said, "How am I going to learn this?" And she said, "Go ask John." I mean, she was literally on her deathbed. And so I reached out to John, who I knew a little bit through Alternate Roots. And I said, "Joe says I need to learn from you." And he said, "All right, come on." And I ended up going around and following. At this point in his life, this is decades later from your stories, he was teaching Story Circle and mostly doing residencies at universities. And whenever he had one in the Northeast, I'd go up to Massachusetts or Rhode Island, or Connecticut, or New York State, and watch him and assist him. And so that's how I learned from John.
If it's all right to ask, then, how long have you been in this region, Joanne?
I've been here for 14 years.
So you know the community, or you have a sense of it?
I have a sense of it, But, you know, each community, when you say community, there's micro communities, and they each have their own mysteries and secrets and their own histories. So this process has been really great for us because it started out with United Way, a committee on United Way that I was involved with, and we were looking at what's really going on in the communities across several counties. And we had had some scholars that were doing the hard data crunching, but we wanted to have a more holistic, a wholesome approach to what the stories were for people in the community. And that's when the United Way hired Rebecca Armstrong. She connected with Jerry, and we started doing story circles within United Way. But now we're with another group, which Jerry will talk about now.
Well, I knew Rebecca. Rebecca, for a time, went to school with my daughter, who now teaches theater in New Orleans, University of New Orleans. But the name Armstrong, Rebecca is from that family. So David Armstrong, the artist, was her uncle. And so I'd known Rebecca and that family for a very long time. Artists, we hang together. And so, yeah, Rebecca was a big part of this. She reached out and asked me if I would do story circle trainings for this group that was building a United Way. And we did that, and then it got passed on to Susquehanna Valley Mediation.
Yes, there was an opportunity to apply for a grant from the Pennsylvania Council on the Humanities. And Susan Jordan, who's the executive director there, called me and said, you want to look at this grant? And I was like, it's due in 2 days. She said, well, I think we should do it. So we did. And we ended up being one of 24 groups across the state that won this grant. It was specifically for rural groups and for BIPOC groups. And it was a very exciting program. We got a lot besides the money, a lot of training, a lot of opportunity to work with other and just sit with other artists and community folks from across the state. It was very, very beneficial. At least it was to me. I think it was to our group. And so from that, we're doing this work, which is continuing the work of the story circles, as well as creating a performance piece from the material of the story circles.
So we've been listening. You know, it's important in a world right now where there's so much division and distrust that it is vitally important to open our hearts and our ears and to pay attention and to listen to people who are different. And turns out everybody's different. Everybody is different. We have a story that starts our play. It's a guy who says, my family has been here for 8 generations, and I'm not even sure I belong. Turns out the young actor who's playing it, his family, you know, his ancestors were among the original Mennonite settlers, 1742, that came to this area. And he tells me, that's how I feel. That's true. And so we do have this image of a dominant voice, and in some areas of our world, economics, politics perhaps, that does seem to be true. But if we actually sit down with our neighbors in a church basement, on a porch, around a barbecue, we find out we have more differences and more in common and more affections than we could possibly imagine.
And more humor.
Yeah. And yeah. Music. And so it was Joanne's. This is Joanne's title. And that's what that kind of comes from.
Tell us, Joanne.
The title is The Really, Really Real Traveling Medicine Show. And you know how when you're imagining things, one of the first images that came to me was from the film The Wizard of Oz, when Dorothy runs away and she meets this guy who's supposedly a medicine man. And we all know that, you know, But they were selling snake oil, stuff like this. This is something that's going on in American history for a long time. And it's unfortunately still happening. But I think that in the telling of the stories and sitting together with each other, it's not about seeing past difference. It's about glorying in the differences that we have. And also knowing that the differences can in some ways be the things that unite us. Because we all, I mean, from my experience, we all have had moments of triumph, of sadness, of ecstasy, of love, of terror. We've all experienced these things. We're human beings. I know I keep saying to Jerry, well, you know, it's hard to be a human being. It is, but I think that when we can sit with each other and sing together and listen to each other and eat together, because that's one of the things that's going to happen in the show.
Yeah, we're going to serve food.
We're going to serve food. Yeah, the fellowship table, or what they used to call the welcome table. So we're going to sit the welcome table for everybody to show up, to hear each other's stories, to sing with each other, because there's going to be an opportunity for people to sing together and to see that, yes, there's differences. The differences are beautiful. And our similarities make us, I hate to sound cliche, but they make us, our differences and our similarities make us strong together.
And so the first half of the Really, Really Real Traveling Medicine Show, and the medicine is in the stories and in the listening, and it's really, really real, will be performance. And then the second half, we'll sit around the welcome table and we will share stories. So the performance itself is only 60, 70 minutes.
Yeah.
But I've found this medicine to be real since I began to do this work. And we've done some versions right here. You and I have sat across this table talking about them. The Flood Stories plays, the Agnes play we mentioned earlier, the work we did in Bethlehem with Festival Unbound. But also, you know, I've done this work in Rwanda and Uganda, most recently in Poland with Ukrainian war displaced, listening to one another, laughing together, feeling together brings a certain kind of healing that gives us the courage to go on.
You were actually literally dealing with opioids, which is a kind of medicine in Kentucky, and you had remarkable results.
It is amazing. And again, correlation is not causality, all the scholars listening. That is true. But we started to do these plays in 2004 when Harlan County, Kentucky was the epicenter of the opioid crisis. Things were really bad. A lot of funerals. They're still doing the plays. I've stepped away after the first few, but they're still doing the plays. About 8 years into the project, they sent me a map from the Kentucky State Board of Health that showed that Harlan County, which had been the highest opioid death rate in the nation, was now one of the lowest opioid death rates in Kentucky. Not the play that does it. It is the courage the community gets to do things like create a drug court, like perhaps elect different people, like set up job interview things at churches and all kinds of things that could open up other ways of being. Because once you're stuck and you're stuck in a secret, you get locked in.
You reacted just then, Joanne. What about that?
Well, I was thinking about how creativity, people, sometimes you learn when you're a kid that when you're in third grade and you come in back from summer break, and your teacher asked you to write a little thing about what you did in the summer break, and you write this little story about going to your grandparents' house in Independence, Missouri, and you went to the soda shop and you had soda and how great that was because you'd never had it before. And then you turn it in, and when you get it back, it's just bleeding, all these red marks on it. So that begins to shut down your thinking that you have anything important to say or any creativity. This kind of work, I've seen how people see, oh, my voice is of value. My insight is of value. My possibility of creating something different and thinking differently, you know, moving from here to here, you see things differently. So I think that that's part of the what I would call the healing process is being able to open up your mind and see things a little bit differently than maybe you had before or see things deeper in a way that you hadn't before.
I think humans have a deep capacity to live with difference. Otherwise, we wouldn't have towns. We wouldn't have cities. We'd all be living in the woods on our own. We actually prefer to live around difference. And maybe because of our, here I am sitting in a studio, but maybe because of the way digital media has moved us, we are now, you know, I don't want to talk to anybody that disagrees with me. Nonsense. Of course we do. We're humans. That's how we go. That's how we live. That's how we thrive.
For people who hear the term story circle, you literally mean a circle. People,
yes, we've been doing, since we got this part of the project going, we've been doing story circles at the Union County Library once a month. We do them in senior citizen communities. We've done them at colleges. I've done several at Bloomsburg, at Susquehanna, at all over the place. And each group has different things that they're sort of interested in. We did one group in Bloomsburg with women of the African diaspora about their hair. That was the prompt. Tell us a story about your hair. And everybody had a story, right? And about the politics, the social issues around not being able to find somebody who can do your hair or find the products or whatever it was. There's, you know, there's stories. And In the story circles themselves, people sit in a circle. Each person is given 3 minutes to tell their story. We're very careful about that. And we also have democratized the response to the story so that some people don't get, oh, yeah, that's great, great, great. And other people get silenced. So there's a democratization around how we tell the stories, how long each person gets. And I think we try to be very careful about confidentiality. In this process, using the material, people had to sign a contract or...
an informed consent.
Yeah, I guess we would have called it human protocol in academia. But anyway, people had to sign that, agreeing to our use of the material. And we also tell people some of the stories will be difficult, but you need to take care of yourself and how you want to tell it. Because we never know how deep these stories go. And you might get, you know, 2 days later, oh my goodness, maybe I should have done something different with that story. Or, oh my goodness, I've heard someone's story and it went deeper in me than I realized at the time. So we try to be very careful and remind people that self-care is important in the work that we're doing.
Now, Jerry, you told us, and I know that you do, you were learning and writing with Joe Carson. What does it mean to you to have an array of stories you all work together, get the recording either audio or written?
Well, audio recordings are made at some of the circles, not all of them. Everybody has to agree to it or it doesn't happen. Back when I started doing this work, you just had to listen to it and reel it back. But now there's software that will give you a pretty rough transcription. And Susquehanna Valley Mediation provided a staff person who then cleaned that up. And so I would get transcripts and could listen. I rarely listened, actually. I just read them and found sometimes I would listen to them if I really needed to see the spirit of how something was said. Mm-hmm. And then I would edit them into often shorter than 3 minutes that get to the heart of the story or that find the twist in the story. And then they get, you know, read back to the people who shared them or they're invited to come hear them. And people can have they have the power. They have the agency to say, that's not how I told it. Or I would say it differently. Or you're emphasizing something that I would have. And it changes. Or you say, oh, please don't tell that story. Mm-hmm. My Aunt Phyllis would be embarrassed. So, you know, I mean, it is guided by that, by a community sense of agency. Something else happens, too, that I really want to point to, in that we live today, you know, as we have finished the first quarter of the century, in a time when if we are told constantly the only stories that matter come from celebrities, only stories that matter. You know, I know what the Kardashians had for breakfast. I don't particularly care what the Kardashians had for breakfast, but reality TV has done that to us. And reality TV isn't real. It's edited. The stories are, if not predetermined, they're just not scripted. So someone sits there and edits it. But what has happened is that our own stories, which at the same time we're losing porch time, we're losing just listening to each other, seem to be less and less important. And we don't feel like we matter. And so even though we're doing this in the marvelous new trying to develop arts center in Sunbury, Pennsylvania, the Albright, which is a project of Sunbury Revitalization, a church that had closed down, and they're turning it into a multifaceted arts center. And so we're going to do it in there. It is not a...
in a church basement?
It's a church basement. We're coming back to the church basement.
Yeah, it was so funny when we first went there and we looked around the space and we got down to the fellowship hall and we were sitting on the lip of the little stage there and I was like, I feel really comfortable here.
But, you know, we'll have because I was at BTE for so long, I brought in folks, you know, our costume person is a person with BTE and Bucknell background. Our lighting person, who's also doing the projections, works at BTE all the time, has designed there forever. So we were able to bring in really terrific support folks so that the frame around these stories will look and feel gorgeous. And the stories will be lifted and will go, my story is important too.
Tell us about the music, Joanne.
Well, Jerry would send me pieces that he looked at and worked on. And I would respond by sending him music clips of music that's out there or spirituals or union work songs or whatever they were. And that was my response. I was responding through music. And so the music comes from lots of different places. We've got a great group of musicians led by Lee Sevilla Isaac, who used to live in Williamsport, but now he lives in Pittsburgh. And he's going to be coming in from Pittsburgh to work with us. I'm very excited about what we're going to be doing. So there'll be music that is more band music, and then there'll be music that will be led by the cast that will invite the audience to sing with us.
Our choreographers, it's more movement than dance, but there's some dance. But she's got Broadway credits. Erin Barnes is an amazing young talent, and they're also in the cast. So we have a terrific cast.
And tell us about the cast. Did you open a call or people who told their stories?
We didn't have time. And things have been happening where funding has been cut to stuff. Or in this case, SVM was told on this grant, you have to spend the money by this date. And it was either return the money or do it. And so it turned into not being a touring show and had to be a one-shot weekend deal. And it had to be done by the end of the first quarter of this year, which is the end of March. So our performance dates are the last weekend in March in Sunbury. And so having gotten this news in early December, we realized we just needed to put a call out to the folks that were already involved in the Story Circle work, that had an idea of what we were doing, that we could have conversations with about what it meant. The recruiting tended to be pretty internal, but it's a great group of people. And there are seven of them. And I'm having a blast. And we have a terrific stage manager who has stage managed and acted in New York and Chicago. And Lamont is amazing, a great spirit in the room. So we're having a good time doing stuff that is fun, sometimes cuts deep, but then it gets fun again, and then it gets real musical.
I love rehearsal because that's the refining fire, and you have a chance to make things happen and allow things to arise. So I'm having a really good time when I'm at rehearsal. Enjoying people who maybe this is the first time they've ever sung in front of people, but you know, I hear that voice. I want to hear that low end. I want to hear that. I need that. We need that. So that's been really fun, exciting to work with people who have a variety of experiences. Some, like Erin, have had a lot of experience. Others who haven't.
And so, yeah, we've got the cast ranges from age 20 to pushing 70, and looks like almost any spectrum you could imagine. It's pretty beautiful.
Is there a name of a spiritual we'd recognize?
Oh, of course. Everybody knows Wade in the Water, you know. Wade in the water. Wade in the water, children. Wade in the water. God's gonna trouble the water. And others like that. And then there might be a couple that you might have learned when you were at camp or Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, Campfire Girls, the Y. But they all, and some childhood games, like playground games that most of us, a lot of us know. So it's a variety of kinds of music that the people will be able to hear and participate in. We wanted to have an opportunity for people to take part in something and not just be spectators. So it is very interactive. And there are, I'm a liturgist. Or a ceremonialist, ritual performance artist. So there's elements of ritual in it, but ritual that brings people together across religions, spiritualities. It's not just one thing, but those kinds of things that happen when you're together, like singing together, moving together, that kind of thing.
You have a script with you, Jerry.
I do.
And if there's a story you'd like to share with us, please do.
This one, you'll have to imagine a mom's voice. And not my scratchy one today. I have this other hat that I wear about working in disability communities or special need communities. And I've been helping to run Camp Emerge, which is a family camp at Camp Victory in Millville for families touched by autism spectrum disorder. And so this story hit me. Talk about a proud mommy moment. When you have a child with a disability, the challenges are just daily, and you live in a life of flux. And adaptations and modifications and every situation that are just, you know, it's just a constant, just the way you roll. But here was one day, and we were attending the usual, you know, Christmas concert that you do in elementary school and middle school and high school. And, you know, you kind of endure the off-key notes for as long as you can because your kid's up there on stage. And they're shining in their outfit, right? And though my son, you know, he's a visual learner, so he's probably back somewhere in the drum line learning, you know, having someone either hand over hand or showing them how to hit the bell or how to beat the drum or how to clap the cymbals, kind of like that. And I'm totally cool with that because he is included. And that's one of my favorite words, inclusion. But he loves the band. He loves music. He's included and he's happy. But one day, the whole band and the band director decided that they were going to surprise me. Surprise the audience, too, for that matter. So during the Christmas concert, I'm sitting there, and the band director introduces my son from back in the drum section. And he calls him up to the podium. And my son's just a deer in the headlights, but he's easygoing. He's going to do this thing. And apparently they've practiced this. Every kid in the band is sworn to secrecy. So the moment comes. The band director, he turns my kid around, and he gives him the baton. And then the music starts. My son is the conductor of a holiday Christmas song. And he's up in front of the kids. And they're playing wonderfully. And his arm is going up and down in rhythm. And when it was all over, the entire audience erupted into this roar of applause. And not only that, his peer group in the band gave him a standing ovation behind him. This was my Christmas surprise. This was my Christmas miracle that year. I had a moment to be proud. Not only of my son, of course I am, but of this band director who saw something in my son. And he rose him up and he put him in front of all the other kids to show me and everybody else that he just doesn't belong in the back. He belongs in the front. One thing I'd like to say is that there are heroes in our community, like that band director. Bravo. They're not that rare. They're not. They're in every school. They're in churches everywhere. And we need to celebrate them, because in that will be the beloved community that we're all trying to build. This was Story Circle done through this project there. It comes from a mom in a story circle. This one was at EOS, another space of heroes, the Therapeutic Writing Center in Columbia County. And you know, what I tried to bring to it was editing and structure. That's it. Selection, juxtaposition, and editing is what I bring as a writer. But this is a story that is real, that is true, that has happened here. And I think it happens a lot.
Wade in the water. Wade in the water, children.
Gerard Stropnicki and Joanne Henry, co-directors of the Really, Really Real Traveling Medicine Show, an interactive production that brings regional voices to the stage in a blend of theater, music, dance, visual art, and storytelling, presented by Susquehanna Valley Mediation, Friday and Saturday, March 27th and 28th at 7 p.m., and Sunday, March 29th at 3 at the Albright Center, 450 Chestnut in Sunbury. In 2024, Susquehanna Valley Mediation was one of 24 recipients of a Wingspan grant from PA Humanities. The funding supported dozens of story circles with over 500 participants, training for volunteer facilitators, collecting community stories, expanding civic engagement across the region, and producing a culminating public event, this event. Wingspan is part of PA Humanities' 50th anniversary initiative and supports rural and BIPOC organizations engaged in community-based humanities programming. The Really, Really Real Traveling Medicine Show, taking place March 27th and 28th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, March 29th at 3 at the Albright Center, 450 Chestnut Street in Sunbury, featuring stories shared by community members across the Susquehanna Valley over the past 2 years, directed by Gerard Stropnicki and Joanne Henry. And we have a chance to take part. And if you need more information, it's svmediation.org, svmediation.org, MEDIATION.